This is CBS, Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Daniel Henniger, the deputy editor of the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal. He writes the column Wonderland, observing schools as they prepare to reopen, perhaps now, certainly in the fall. And one of the aspects of the pandemic was this conversation about race that turned into something that is called the critical race theory. However, it was presented to a number of schools that Dan points to as a conversation about race. And Dan, I take it from your reporting here that we're seeing spontaneously across the United States, public schools and private schools, parents becoming alert to what's happening with their education curricula. It looks spontaneous to me. Is that accurate, Dan? Good evening to you.
Hi there, John. Yes, it is spontaneous, or it's a kind of delayed reaction to something that was building. It's an extraordinary thing to see, really, this pushback against the teaching of critical race theory in schools. Let's put this in a bit of context, starting with the fact that Joe Biden ran on returning the country to normalcy, and that would have included racial harmony. And, of course, we had the murder of George Floyd last May, and just this past week or so, we have marked the first year anniversary of that event. Now, we went through the summer. It was a difficult summer, and I think whatever one's politics, people generally thought, well, yeah, it looks like we're going to have a reconsideration of racial relationships in the United States. This was unavoidable. It had to be addressed. People were going to do that in good faith. And then suddenly this year, parents of children in public and private schools woke up to discover that their schools and their school systems had imposed the teaching of critical race theory and the idea that structural racism was endemic to the United States in their schools and in their classrooms. And parents are just taken aback and are reacting, pushing back against this. Here in New York City, one of the most earliest examples were two extremely liberal private schools, Dalton Academy and Grace Church, where the parents wrote open letters to the administration objecting to the teaching of critical race theory in these schools. And in the subsequently, we now have, I think, upwards of six states that have passed legislation banning the teaching of critical race theory in schools in those states. So this is an extraordinary moment to arrive at after we thought that there would be a reconsideration of these issues. We wake up to discover that the other side doesn't want a conversation. They want an imposition, and they want to impose these novel ideas on the rest of the country.
I puzzle, Dan, in reading your column today. There seems to be a convergence of events about the Biden administration. I mentioned the infrastructure bill conjoined with the jobs bill. I think the number is $6 trillion that has to be passed in one gigantic boat, or maybe not at all in the Congress. I add to that Afghanistan and the retreat from Afghanistan. And then the president of the United States frustrated, I presume, with two members of his own Senate caucus who will not go along with his plans. There are more examples, but I'll stop there and say, has the Biden agenda that was not exactly talked about at length during the campaign, but emerged since the inauguration, something associated with the progressive part of the Democratic Party, has that agenda slowed or stopped in some fashion? Is this just good weather and people are not as intense anymore? How do you judge it, Dan?
Well, I think I'd agree it has slowed. I don't believe it has stopped. But I do think what I was just discussing, the reaction of teaching a critical race theory and having that imposed on schools, is of a piece with these other things. Make no mistake, the progressive wing of the Democratic Party thought this was their moment. Joe Biden won the election and quickly adopted many of their ideas and platforms and indeed legislation. I think the problem for them was, John, that they expected to do better in the Senate and House races. They thought they would have stronger majorities in the Congress than they turned out to have. A very narrow one was six seats in the House. Now I believe it's 10. And, of course, you've got a 50-50 Senate. which under our system makes it very difficult to pass legislation. I think the left, the progressives, are pushing as much through the funnel as they can. And politics be damned, quite frankly. It's like what's going on down at the border, which does not appear to be politically popular. All of these poor migrants swimming across the Rio Grande River. I think the left wants to break Trump's policies wherever they can and try to put in place laws and policies of their own and let the Republicans worry about repealing it later if they win. The problem with all that is one single thing, John, and that is the legislative filibuster in the Senate. You cannot pass a lot of this legislation, like the H.R. 1 voting rights law, without getting 60 votes to overcome the filibuster. So all the pressure, the whole game comes down to leaning on Democratic senators, Joe Manchin of West Virginia and Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona, to vote to blow up the legislative filibuster, allowing a simple majority to pass all of this progressive legislation. That's the battle for the soul of these two Democratic senators. And, you know, there are some thinking that they will break under the pressure. They both say they're standing on principle, but it is a dramatic event, and it's going to play out in the next 8 weeks.
Another item that was mentioned during the campaign by Senator Warren from Massachusetts was forgiving student debt. I don't think I've seen that discussed. Here's how I put all these things together, Dan. The Biden administration entered office with a lot of good feeling for Mr. Biden to do well. I mean, he's a man of great experience and a veteran and understood as a middle of the roader for all of his career. And he went along with the progressive agenda. However, it's in him to adjust, Dan. He's adjusted before. Do you discern that he wants to compromise, that he's ready to make the deals? There's talk, for example, about compromising on corporation taxes, which seem to be promising. Can he do that in other areas, including this one about imposing curricula on students?
Well, it remains to be seen. Joe Biden is a lifelong politician. And I think the Biden's politics and the politics of the White House are a day-to-day work in progress. I do believe that Biden, early on, when he felt more hopeful about all this legislation, took to heart Bernie Sanders' view that Joe Biden could be the most progressive president since Franklin Delano Roosevelt. That's a heavy name to conjure with. And I think Biden decided, yeah, he wouldn't mind at all having his legacy be that he was spoke about in terms of progressive legislation in the same breath as FDR, perhaps even surpassing Barack Obama. But the reality today is that most of that is not happening. And so will Joe Biden vault to a legacy of at least accomplishing something on the basis of compromise rather than accomplishing nothing over his 4 years? That's the choice that Joe Biden's got to make right now.
At this point, Dan, the Biden administration could entertain no legislation by the end of the year unless he does compromise, if I read these statistics correctly. Is that correct? No legislation.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. You know, they get the Democrats in the Senate get one more bite at using reconciliation to bundle a lot of legislation into something nominally called budget legislation and vote on that with a simple majority. So that is kind of the escape valve that they got. So they will get some things through using reconciliation, though the Senate parliamentarian looks as though she's now going to rule some of these non-germane pieces of legislation out of order for reconciliation, which, you know, John, when you think about it, it all kind of adds up to politics as usual.
Yes, it does. Daniel Henniger, deputy editor of the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Besh.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.